Steven, are you impish or admirable?
I mean, hopefully admirable, right?
Oh, come on. Impish is so much more fun.
But I don't want to get hit by a stick.
I mean, Meredith does. Meredith is ready for it.
Yeah.
All right. We are talking about the episode Dwight's Christmas, Season 9, Episode 9, originally airing December 6, 2012. There's no cold, warm Christmas eggnog. There's no open at all. It's just one big episode. There's no intro.
You know, I backed up. I was like, did I just miss the intro?
I did too. I did the exact same thing. I was like, where was it? Because I saw the credits rolling and I, you know, the names and nothing.
It's the shortest possible opening.
Yeah, like, so it says that this is the only episode in the entire series that doesn't have the intro music.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah. Definitely strange.
I wonder why they did that, because usually if they need a little bit more time, they either like extend the episode a tiny bit or they have like a short opening, but it wasn't like a very long episode. It was still like kind of that 21 minutes.
Too much glue wine.
Glue vine? Blue vine.
That sounds like wine with gluten in it. I don't want that.
It sounds like a candy that I don't want to eat. Like a some sort of licorice rope that's been melted down.
That's the worst.
Into a drink. All right. So, the episode opens and Jim is going off to Philly. He's a little bit nervous. He is second guessing a blue shirt that he packed, even though he's always wearing a blue shirt. And at the same time, Aaron realizes that today was supposed to be the Christmas party and nobody planned it.
Oh, hey guys, the Christmas party is today. Merry Christmas, everyone!
No, is it?
I mean, it says Xmas party, but I think we all know what that's code for.
So we're not gonna have a Christmas party this year? Angela, how could you do this to us?
Oh, right. Like, I'm responsible because I'm in charge of the party planning committee.
Well, you are the one in charge.
Don't blame me for something we all forgot.
Let's not blame her for something we all forgot.
Yeah, I love the way the Christmas party happens this time. I mean, this is what the... How many Christmas episodes are there? Are there seven? Six or seven?
We did that Christmas episode.
We drafted them once. I don't remember how many there are.
We did. There was a lot. There, maybe eight?
Yeah,
maybe seven.
This is a fantastic way to get into it. I think there's seven because there's not one in season one and there's not one in season four. Season four is the short season, I think. So,
right, because of the writer strike.
If someone knows, let us know and get a Dundee, I guess.
I mean, we really should know. We did do that whole episode like where we listed them all.
We did. That was fun. We were both joined by our spouses and we drafted Office Christmas episodes. Anyways.
I'll put a link to that in our show notes.
Awesome. That was so much fun to record.
That was fun.
So it's just totally slipped Angela's mind. And, you know, clearly she has a lot going on. I love her line of like, oh, I'm responsible because I'm in charge of the planning committee. It's like, yeah. And then we get this start of kind of a running joke in this episode of Oscar being the most transparent yes man you've ever seen. He just like he's backing Angela at every turn, every moment. And he has this great talking head of the cameras like, I never knew how many great points she had until she tried breaking my kneecaps.
I didn't realize how many of Angela's opinions I agreed with until she tried to have my kneecap shattered for sleeping with her husband. She makes a lot of very sound points.
Yeah, I like that. Like, we don't focus on that plot line anymore much for this episode, except we have the Oscar yes man situation. Like, that talking head is kind of the only major reference to what happened previously, but I like that we are focused on the Christmas stuff for this episode, and we kind of let that go for now, and I'm sure we'll pick it up later.
This is how they've handled some heavy relationship stuff in previous seasons, where there'll be like a relationship heavy episode and then something else and they'll kind of come back to it. So it's a bit of that same pattern, but I do like that we get little touches of it. We get Oscar backing Angela. We also get Dwight later judging Oscar as impish after he like looks over and makes eye contact with Angela, like he does it for her. So I like that there's still a little bit of a thread of it.
So in this episode, we have like the main focus of Dwight's Christmas party. And I love how they come to getting Dwight's Christmas, I guess, on the docket here, where everyone starts off by blaming each other why the Christmas party hasn't happened. I also love how Phyllis chimes in.
I knew the party was today, but nobody asked me to plan it, so I didn't. Funny how that works.
She's still a little spicy about previous party planning committee shenanigans.
But after they're done blaming each other, then they all start to kind of like design by committee, and everyone is suggesting different Christmases, what they shouldn't do, what they don't want to do. And Jim is super keen on having Dwight's version of the authentic Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas.
Well, then why don't we just get some liquor and those mini cupcakes?
Mini cupcakes? As in the mini version of regular cupcakes, which is already a mini version of cake? Honestly, where does it end with you people?
What about an authentic Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas? Drink some Glühwein, enjoy some Hasenpfeffer. Enjoy Christmas with St. Nicholas's rural German companion, Belschnickel.
Yes, that. Definitely doing that. Are we all in agreement?
No.
No!
This is Jim's like last day before he's kind of going off to Philly. Not permanently yet, but like it's a very much a moving on moment for Jim, mm-hmm. that he's going to be starting this new job in another city. And so I love that Pam kind of gives Jim this gift of getting Dwight's party to be the party that gets picked, because Jim is just so keen on seeing like all the crazy stuff that Dwight is planning on bringing to this party. And everyone else, no one else wants it except for Jim. But Pam has his back.
Yeah, Jim even references later that it's like the last Christmas party. And clearly he's sort of, he's not checked out from Dunder Mifflin, but he sees that the future is in Philly. I do also want to mention the other Christmas ideas that were floated by other people.
Yes.
Stanley wants a tropical Christmas. You know, he wants to relive that Florida Stanley glory days, I guess. Meredith wants a topless Christmas.
Which she has had in the past, kind of.
Yeah. And Creed wants topless Swissmas, which the camera crew like yanks him into the conference room. Like, what are you talking about? He's like,
Spanish tapas and Swiss Miss hot cocoa. What's so hard to understand?
What's so hard to understand? Can you think of a worse combination of things?
Tapas Swiss Miss.
Top it. Oh, it's so good. But Angela is going to call an emergency meeting of the party planning committee. And as Pam gets up to go in, she kind of tells Jim, like, hey, I've got this. I'm going to make it happen. And then she gives this impassioned speech to the party planning committee about they're there because they were willing to take risks and we should take on Dwight's party. And they agree, but Angela wants her name taken off of it, which again, Oscar quickly agrees with.
We're the party planning committee, and we did not get where we are by playing it safe. We got here by being risk takers. And yeah, Dwight's party is going to be terrible. Maybe. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's going to be great. And if it's great, I think we all know what that would mean to us.
Let's do it.
Yes, Phyllis.
No, I don't want my name attached to this party.
What does that even mean? Where would your name appear?
Please, just take my name off of everything.
Just take her name off of everything.
And then when she makes the announcement, it's like the party planning committee minus Angela have decided we're going to have the Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas.
Dwight is thrilled. I love Dwight's enthusiasm here. I think it's so endearing how excited he is to show everybody his version of Christmas. And I think that that's what makes like this whole episode so very sweet, is how invested in it he gets. And he's particularly like really focused on enjoying it with Jim. And I think not only because Jim was like enthusiastic about it, but because I think that whole brotherly vibe, I feel like their closeness, like he is excited to show his friends what like a traditional holiday is for him.
Dwight's Christmas.
Yes! Yeah! Yeah! Okay! Yay! Yes! It's a Christmas miracle! Yeah! Woohoo!
Dwight, yes. There is one rule that you need to take very seriously. Uh-huh. And that is... That there are no rules.
You have never been cooler.
I find Dwight's enthusiasm to be so genuine and great. And that's kind of what makes it even sadder towards the end of the episode where, you know, Jim needs to go off to Philly and he's leaving and Dwight takes it really hard. But, you know, we'll get to that.
The party begins and it's pretty subdued at first. Like, there's not a lot of decoration. There's a bugle that he blows to start the celebration.
Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas has officially begun.
We get a little tour of some of the food items that he's brought.
Ugh, what is this stuff? Lava?
That is glühwein, otherwise known as glow wine, also used to sterilize medical instruments.
The wine, which you mentioned earlier, is served with a spoon that was used to guide him through the birth canal. So there's that. There's that to think about.
It seems gentler than forceps. I mean, honestly.
I guess so, yeah. And there's the hog maw.
Somebody's found the hog maw. What? It's a Pennsylvania Dutch specialty. Hog maw. That's a beauty, isn't it? I don't even want to tell you what it's made of until after you try it.
Ugh, I'm not eating mystery meat.
It is stuffed pig stomach. And after we finish it, we get to break the pig rib.
Can't wait.
Weird.
What is it stuffed with? I don't want to
know. Other pig parts?
I don't want to know.
The rest of the pig, they turn it inside out into the stomach.
Oh. It's too early for that.
I mean, we do know that there's a pig rib in there somehow.
There is, and you get to break that.
So there's a rib in the stomach.
Look, I don't make up these traditions. You said that to me as if I was the one who put it in there. Nothing to do with it.
I don't know. You're from the country, so you could... You could have had something like this. Is there something like this of your people?
No. Meredith is kind of pining for the more traditional Christmas party, which is weird because she won a topless Christmas party a few minutes ago. But Dwight is like, no, this is what we're doing. We're celebrating Christmas the right way for the right reasons. All that other stuff is just a distraction. And we get this little moment between Jim and Pam. They're talking to the camera about how, you know, it's better than they expected. And then they see, Pam sees, like, over the shoulder of the cameraman that Dwight has a candle and is reading a poem. And the camera whips around and shows it. And then they run out of the conference room. And then it's edited together where we see them actually leave the conference room from the outside, which, again... And I know, like, I harp on these things. I find it just interesting the way they do it. Like, again, another breaking of the wall a little bit that we are seeing a documentary being filmed as a documentary. Like, oh, we actually don't see people come in and out of the conference room for these interviews, but we kind of see it. We kind of see it here a little bit.
Yeah, more and more on this ninth season, they are breaking that wall down. We, you know, it has happened throughout the series. It's like kind of the whole mockumentary style in that they intentionally show these moments, but it's increasing in this season. Mm-hmm. And that also stood out to me too, and not in a bad way. Like, I really like it. I like that they are getting a little bit more lax. Like, I feel like everyone is feeling the filming winding down, and this all kind of does feel a little bit extra footagey, you know, at this point. And so I understand the lack of discipline with some of these shots, and I really like it because I know where it's leading,
right.
And it isn't making that transition like that we happened upon to later to be as jarring because we have more and more of these broken moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we maybe check in on Pete and Aaron and then come back when our special guest arrives?
Sure, because Dwight excuses himself. He needs to go to his car to take a dump. So while he's doing that...
That line cracked me up when I rewatched this.
Excuse me. I have to run to my car to take a dump.
Wish my car had a bathroom.
Kevin's a little jealous. But so while he's doing that, we should talk about what's up with Pete and Aaron and Nellie and Toby. And Daryl.
And Daryl's just having a time this episode.
Let's start with Daryl.
Okay. So at one point, Jim is in the kitchen, and this sort of actually starts Daryl's storyline and Toby and Nellie's. But Daryl tells the cameras, like, you know, Jim talked to me about this job months ago, and I haven't heard anything. And now he's going off to Philadelphia without me. And Daryl's like, hey, did you forget anything about this trip? You know, anything you forget to pack, any people? And Jim doesn't really acknowledge that. And that sort of sets Daryl off. He's going to partake of some Dutch Pennsylvania wine and get increasingly hammered as the episode goes on. He eventually kind of gets to a point where he's going to confront Jim about it. It's like, hey, you know, I've been your friend for a long time and you told me this was going to happen. And, you know, from Daryl's perspective, Jim just kind of forgot about it.
Now, the way I see this whole plot line, I like it. I like where Daryl's coming from. I totally get it. He was like getting himself all hyped up about this new job. But at the same time, he even mentions it in this episode in his talking head, like that he only mentioned it to him once, like 2 months ago. And if we, you know, think back to that episode, Jim was talking in the hypothetical anyway.
Yeah.
And it was like there were no real promises made here, but Daryl took it as a real promise. So I don't see Jim as doing anything wrong. And I'm pretty sure that's like the intention here, that, you know, Daryl is blowing this up. But I find it even more endearing and really like stand up, like a stand up guy kind of thing to do for Jim, in that he really did follow through and ask the guys about, you know, giving Daryl an interview. And I feel like that's like a pretty big ask really early in the company, unless it, you know, came up that like, hey, we're looking for more people. Mm-hmm. For like a new guy who's coming in with like a really small investment, who was just, you know, working remote, like struggling to get himself even over there. He initially turned down even working for the company at all, to now like get his friend an interview to get in. I think that that's extremely admirable as we're talking about in this episode. But yeah, I thought that was like it surprised me that Jim had followed up on that.
Hmm.
And not that I think that he would forget about Daryl, but I think that Daryl overestimated how much Jim promised.
I could see that. I didn't really think about that while watching the episode, but hearing your take on it, I totally see that. And I think we've all been there, right? Like someone mentions something off the cuff and then we sort of take it as gospel, and then you get like your feelings hurt later on. Like we've all done that, right? Like I think about it with like kids, right? It's like, oh, hey, we're going to go to the zoo next week. And then like next week comes and goes, we haven't gone to the zoo, and it's like, you know, it's a big deal.
You said we were going to the zoo.
Right.
You promised.
It's like, you swore.
It's like we mentioned.
And so, yeah, I get it. And, you know, it's I guess at the end of the day, it's like mismatched expectations. But at the end of the day, we do learn that Jim came through. But at that point, it's too late for Daryl and his alcohol consumption.
You!
Oh, hey, man. Oh, you know what? Before I forget again, I talked to the guys about hiring you. They're going to bring you in for an interview.
He's gone too far. Collapses into a table full of food, which is hysterical.
That's great.
Right?
Thanks, man.
Hey, of course.
I shall come by at your convenience.
Thank you, sir. Go get him. Oh!
Very impish.
I love how Daryl is portrayed as super drunk, because they got it so right. Like the sweaty, the swagger, the attitude. And then he's like swaying as Jim is telling him he's getting an interview. And he just like thanks him and does like a celebratory spin and passes out on this table. It's such a good ending to the party. It's really... I mean, it's a horrible ending to the party. It's a good ending for the episode.
That same little kitchen scene also sets up Toby and Nellie, like we said. So Toby's like, you know who else can't work on their startup? The guy who's in jail for being the Scranton Strangler, who's totally innocent. George Howard Scubb.
Classic three-name serial killer, by the way.
Oh, definitely. As he brings this up, people start to like slowly back out of the room. It's just really funny. But Nelly wasn't here for this, right? And I think she's genuinely interested in this. Like, oh, if you can't talk about it. I don't think she's trolling Toby, but I could see how that could be maybe seen that way too. I don't know. What was your read on her approach?
I totally was with you. I think so she's completely interested. She's an outsider, you know, for the group, so had no idea what this was. Also, I kind of think like culturally, she might be a little bit interested in serial killers. I don't know. She's, you know, a middle-aged female and she's British. So like, it's just, it seems like that an American serial killer would be very interesting to her.
Is that a thing British people are interested in?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that they would be, right?
I'm sorry, the Scranton who?
Scranton Strangler. George Howard Scubb, have I not told you about the jury I was on a couple years ago?
Oh, what happened? I mean, if you can talk about it, obviously, because if you can't, I mean, I could
talk about it.
Oh. See you next Christmas.
Have a seat.
But it totally derails the rest of her day. So we check in on them throughout the rest of the episode. And sometimes it's just like one sentence from Toby that doesn't make any sense. But he opens it. It's all you need to know is,
I would start at the beginning, but I think I need to go farther back.
So yeah, Nelly is, she's into it for a time.
Yeah.
But once we start getting towards the end of the episode and it becomes apparent that they are missing the entire Christmas party in order to hear this long, long story that Toby is going into a lot of details about, like down to like the amount of, he's talking about like making change and the difference in, you know, coinage and the change. And so like Nelly eventually puts a stop to it. She just tells him to stop talking. Toby misinterprets this as a possible, you know, making out moment. And Nelly says, okay. So she kisses him to essentially shut him up. But then they end up making out against the refrigerator.
Yeah.
I guess like, it's the holiday spirit. I don't know.
He takes his glasses off and like, yeah, he's into it.
He's passionate. I think that surprises her.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of guilt on his conscience, you know? Got to get it out somehow.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's why.
The other sort of smaller plot line in this episode has to do with Pete and Aaron and Kevin. In the beginning, we learned that Aaron has never seen Die Hard, and it's Pete's favorite movie, and Kevin also loves it. They kind of get into a quote off, and then Kevin has great shame when he messes up a line and like leaves.
I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Come out to the coast. We'll get together. Have a few laughs.
None of this makes any sense to me.
Oh, yeah. And when he takes the gun off his back and he's like, yippee-ki-yay, mother.
Actually, he doesn't say that there. He says it earlier when he's on the radio with Hans.
Yes, you are right. Forgive me.
Oh, that's okay, bud.
Nope.
Common mistake.
No, it's not.
Nerd!
I also love Die Hard. Like Die Hard?
Yeah, who doesn't?
I know. I watch it every Christmas. There were a few years ago, I was playing a game show on The Incomparable, and Die Hard came up. I had never seen it, and so I wasn't able to answer like the questions associated with it. And after that, I was like, all right, I have to see this movie. Ever since then, it has been every Christmas we've watched it. So it is now a staple in the Armin household that we watch Die Hard every Christmas.
That's good. As it should be. Aaron kind of urges Pete to, well, just tell me the whole movie. Just recite the whole movie. And she pulls up like a script online. They, like Toby and Nelly, miss the entire rest of the day because they're back in the annex doing this. And then they eventually end up in Andy's office. But they're going through this and Aaron ends up running off at some point because she gets an email from Andy. And we learn that the boat is sold, but he's really having a hard time. And he's just going to hang out in the Caribbean for a while and figure life out. And that's about it. There's really no apology. There's no further explanation. It's just he's going to be gone a few more weeks. That is how it is.
And we now know at this point that this is the first contact that Aaron has had since he, like, dropped his laptop in the ocean. So Aaron receiving this email was an indication that they had reached land. So Aaron got very excited because she thought she was going to be hearing from Andy that he was coming home soon. And being that, you know, he's had almost no contact with her, and now he's essentially saying, like, hey, I'm going to go figure out my life for the next few weeks. Not like, you know, I'll call you every day or expect to hear. No, none of that. No, you know, really, like, strong sentiments of endearment or anything like that in this email. She's just kind of like given this email like a buddy would have sent it to her. And yeah. She comes back into the room where Pete was reciting the movie, and she's mad, upset, but whatever it is, she's just like trying to hide or focus her feelings here, and she insists that they should go and watch the movie instead of just sitting in the annex listening to Pete quote the whole thing.
Yeah, it's not that she's necessarily rude with him, but very clearly something's bothering her, and she just wants to, I feel like she wants to be in control of something, and she's like, okay, mm-hmm. we're gonna do this other thing. And he goes along with it. He has a copy or two in his car, so that's good. And we see them a little bit later on watching it in Andy's office, and they have this exchange where Aaron sort of has this vulnerable moment. You know, would the question is, would Andy ever jump off an exploding building tied to a hose for me? And Pete's like, yeah, of course. And she starts to cry, and he goes to, like, comfort her, puts her arm around her. And there's this little moment where she says, you know, I'm still with Andy. And he's like, yeah, of course. And he backs off. But then she says, well, you can leave your arm. And they sort of have this moment. And you see the conflict within Aaron. And I think Pete handles it well. You know, he's respectful as soon as she says that. But it is, you know, they're continuing to chip away at the storyline between these two.
So back to the Christmas party. And Belschnickel arrives.
Judgment is nigh, for the Belschnickel is I.
Yes, he is finally nigh.
I am nigh.
Belschnickel is both a name and a title, I guess. It's kind of hard to understand, but dressed in like it's kind of a robe, but it's all brown. His face is kind of dirty. He's got hay sticking out everywhere. And Dwight is very proud.
Oh, Belschnickel has traveled from distant lands to discover how all the boys and the girls have been behaving this last year. Oh, too much strudel.
So he's kind of like Santa, except dirty and worse.
No, much better. No one fears Santa the way they fear Belschnickel. Wow.
It's my favorite part of Christmas, the authority.
And the fear.
Yes, exactly.
He tells the camera that his grandfather was okay at it, but he is great at it. He was born to be this. And Jim keeps kind of poking at Dwight, comparing Belschnickel to Santa.
Der Belschnickel will decide if you are impish or admirable.
Oh, it's like naughty or nice.
No, impish or admirable.
Quick question. Do you just decide who gets what in the moment, or did you make a list?
I decided earlier.
Oh, nice. Did you check that list?
Of course I checked it.
But more than once? Because you could have made a mistake.
I checked it more than once.
Okay, so you made a list, you checked it twice, and now you're going to find out who's...
impish or admirable.
Damn.
We talked about in the opening, he judges people if they've been admirable or impish. And it turns out that Dwight's not making this up, that this is all real. And this is what we learn about Belschnickel's partner, this has been edited over the years. So in 2020, some of this was taken out. But Belschnickel has a partner who is a slave boy named Peter. And in the original cut of this episode, Nate is in blackface. And in 2020, this scene, along with the scene in Community and a couple of other shows, were removed, rightfully so. This is one of those mm-hmm. things that you would not put in a TV show today, and I'm glad that it's gone, but it's obviously like when you watch this episode, if you remember something being in it that's not here now, that's what happened.
Yeah, they did leave in at the end where Nate is in the office, but most of the makeup is wiped off, because they did also leave in where, you know, Dwight is saying, oh, we don't cling to every little bit of our traditions. Of course not. Why would we ever do that? And he's making a phone call to kind of like cancel the arrival of this costumed character and being like, nope, that was a bad idea. And I feel like that's exactly what the producers of the show kind of did at the same time. they made their own phone call a few years later and was like, nope, we didn't think this through.
We end up in the conference room where the admirable or impish judgments will be handed down. Everyone gets a wooden bowl. Phyllis is very into the wooden bowls. She wants to take it
They're
home.
They're a nice bowl.
It is a nice bowl.
Very rustic. I love it.
Take a bowl and pass it down.
Thank you, Dwight. These are nice.
No, these are gift bowls. When you receive a gift, it will go in the bowl, but the bowls must be returned at the end. They're a set.
I feel like wooden bowls aren't in. Like, I feel like they were in maybe in like the 80s or 90s, but they're not in anymore.
Oh, they're in for like the 70s salads. Like, you know, when you go to like an Italian restaurant or a steakhouse, they have those wooden bowls for salad.
I guess so. Kind of grossed me out. Like, can you really ever get that thing clean?
No, you can't. That's why they outlawed them.
That salad dressing is seeping into that wood. But Phyllis is awarded a set of rubber gaskets for canning jars because she has been admirable. Later, Angela gets some canning jars, but they're smaller, so they can't share the gaskets and jars together, which I thought was kind of funny. Oscar, this is when Dwight hands down his judgment on Oscar as well. And he makes eye contact with Angela and then declares him impish and then smacks Oscar with this. It's kind of like a stick or like a broom he's been carrying around. And he smacks Oscar with it for being impish, for being bad.
Oscar Martinez, cheer or fear? Belsnickel is here. I judge your year. It's impish.
Ow! You hit people with that thing?
No, I'm carrying around the stick in order to look cool.
It's like a bundle of switches. Like a, you know, like if they, that used to hit people with them. Like a switch. Like one of those little thin sticks.
Don't want it.
Come on, country. Like, you know exactly what this is.
I kept thinking.
Twice you failed us.
I'm sorry. I was trying to compare it to like, I don't know, something else. But that's what it is. Pam gets a mousetrap. For the kids.
For the kinder.
It's good. Who doesn't want to play with the mousetrap? At this point, it's time for Jim to go. We learned earlier he's going to leave the day before so he can have a night of pacing and puking in a hotel room before his first day at work at the new job. But Dwight wants him to stay. They want to break the pig rib. And Dwight is kind of in and out of character in this moment. But then he resumes character. And he just cranks Jim with these switches. I mean, really wails on him.
No matter. Belsnickel cares not about this. Off with you.
Perfect. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Wait. Don't you want to know your present?
You know what? Yeah, how about it?
Jim Halpert, cheer or fear? Belsnickel is here. I judge a year as impish.
Oh! Are you nuts?
I judge you're impish!
Ow! Okay, that is three. And you didn't hit anybody that hard.
They're not abandoning the party.
Hey!
All right! That's enough. I'm done. Okay?
Impish! Ah!
It kind of reminded me a little bit of snowball fight outside.
Yep.
In the previous Christmas episode. Like, Dwight has the upper hand here. Meredith wouldn't mind being spanked either.
Belsnickel! I gotta run out early, too.
Just for the record.
She's also looking pretty good to Daryl in this episode.
Little Emma Stone thing going on.
Meredith is a little cute. I'm just realizing. She got like an Emma Stone thing.
Christmas brings out so much in everyone in the office. I think that's why the Christmas episodes are so good. Everyone gets into that like weird office party zone where they're all just kind of a little bit off, a lot bit inappropriate. It's good. I like it. I like seeing this side of everyone.
I do too. At this point, things basically kind of unravel for Dwight's party, right? So as Jim and Pam are saying goodbye in the parking lot, Jim gets in a taxi and they have this cute moment.
Well, this is it.
Probably never gonna see you again.
Shut up. I'm trying to be serious.
Okay, sorry.
I can't believe this is actually happening.
Listen, thank you so much for putting that all together. That was the perfect last Christmas party.
And this is where he mentions the perfect last Christmas party. And I think that's when Pam realizes that this is a change that is kind of a one-way street. You know, that if this is successful, their lives are different really forever. And when she comes back upstairs, both she and Dwight are, they're in bad moods about it. You know, they're both kind of sad and
introspective.
Yeah. And I get it. It's very real. Like they both kind of feel the same thing really for the same reasons. And as they're feeling this thing, a more traditional Christmas party run by Phyllis is kind of being put together around them. They found some stuff in the warehouse and they're going to have a take two on the Christmas party.
Yeah, I really feel for Pam and Dwight here in that, like, they're both realizing that things are going to be changing. Dwight is seeing that he's kind of going to be losing someone, maybe like a you know, this brother figure that he had. And he even mentioned, like, so in a talking head, when Dwight is explaining his Christmas, he holds up a old photo of him and his family. And he mentions how his brother in the picture doesn't come home for Christmas anymore. And I think that that little bit of information really reflects on Dwight's feelings when Jim has to leave, because it's like he was using Jim as a replacement brother. And when he was leaving the party, he's like not getting to experience his, you know, family Christmas with this brother figure. And it really depresses him. And that's why he like lashes out and starts like getting violent with Jim. And I think that that's like, you know, a really telling, wonderful moment between these characters, and that like they mean so much to each other. And so we have both Pam and Dwight, who now we know like also of their friendship has gotten closer and closer and closer. And, you know, they're both so upset towards the end of this episode. But after the, you know, the other Christmas party is starting to, you know, form behind them all, a Christmas miracle happens, and Jim comes back.
I'll just have another Dumatril. Jim taught me this really cool way to take it. You crush it into a powder, and you snort it up your butt.
Yep, I did say that.
Jim!
What's going on? Where's the Belschnickel?
Oh my God!
What are you doing?
Last time I saw you, you were whipping me out of the building.
Shh. Let's not speak of that. The pig rib! We could totally break the pig rib! I'm going to dig it out of the trash.
What happened? Did you miss your bus?
No. I just missed my wife.
I found it!
And I found out that there's a bus at 5 a.m.
I really love this. I love that Jim comes back. He says, you know, he missed his wife, but Dwight, you know, swoops in and hugs him first. Mm-hmm. And he gets all excited like a little kid, like, oh, you've come back. He's like, now we could break the pig rib. You know, it's a really great moment that I love that Jim had the foresight to recognize that Pam was visually upset when, you know, she said goodbye to him, that Dwight was super upset when he left the party. And instead of, you know, putting on the blinders and focusing and like getting to the bus station or wherever he was off to in that taxi, he turned around and, you know, figured out that there was another bus that he could take at a different time. And he came back to the party. And I think that that made all the difference for both Pam and Dwight.
100%. And, you know, there's a little bit of a fan theory about this, because this comes a couple weeks after, I guess, the whole incident with like Nellie's anti-anxiety medication. And Dwight makes a reference to it in this episode. And like some people think maybe Dwight has softened a little bit because now he's taking care of himself a little bit more. But I do like it. And I think without the little scene about his brother, and he has a black and white version of the photo and then a Matrix version of the photo, thanks to an app on his phone. But the same phone that he did an SMS text message with last week. So I'm not quite sure what phone he's carrying, but that's fine.
He does have an app for that, so it's fine.
Good. That's a good nerd joke. I like that. But yeah, I think that's important to see like why Dwight feels this way. And at the end of the day, no matter what's happening, they're still important to each other, right? I think that had maybe been lost a little bit. I mean, to the point where they end up breaking the pig rib together and it sprays pig rib juice all over everybody.
Oh, I knew that that was coming and it still grossed me out. Like, it was just...
Yeah, it's gross.
Everyone gets a little bit of it on their face. Mm-hmm. It's so gross. But Jim is delighted. Dwight's delighted, you know. Well, because they weren't the ones that got sprayed, but... Ew. And it's always Phyllis too. It's like Phyllis always gets it. Like, she got hit in the face with the, you know, the soccer ball. Poor Phyllis, right? Was it the football?
Yes, when they were playing with Charles Minor.
Or was it Meredith? Meredith also gets hit in the face a bunch too.
And by a car.
Yep. So it was either Phyllis or Meredith. That was who it was gonna be.
They both get in the face a lot, is what you're saying.
Oh, that is what she said. Is it? Anyway, but yeah, and I think that Jim's change of heart here really has been informed by his earlier mistakes, where he was keeping everything from Pam and, you know, focusing way too much on, you know, figuring out this job and doing all this stuff for himself. And I think that without that going horribly wrong, he wouldn't have had this moment where, you know, he felt the need to come back and actually doing it.
Yeah, he's thinking about the others around him in a way that he wasn't necessarily earlier. And I think mm-hmm. that's good. I mean, there's still going to be friction between Jim and Pam coming up. But at least at this moment, right on the verge of kind of going to Philadelphia for the first time, things seem to be mostly okay.
Yeah. So that's the end of our Christmas episode, because we closed out all the other stories earlier. So Daryl, you know, accepts Jim's apology for not telling him earlier about his interview, and he spins and crashes on the table. And Nellie and Toby make out against the refrigerator in the break room. And Aaron and Pete are watching the end of Die Hard in Andy's office with Pete's arm around Aaron. So that's where we leave things.
Yep. And now this is a big milestone. We're done with Christmas episodes now.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it is. I was really feeling, you know, in anticipation of recording this episode with you, I'm really starting to feel the impending end to this series. And I think that this Christmas episode, like, knowing that, just like Jim said, it's a perfect last Christmas party, I'm really feeling it.
Yeah, me too.
So you can come back and join us next week when we talk about season 9, episode 10, Lice.
Oh,
Happy New Year.
Indeed.
But until then, you can go and find us over at Tall_Beats on Twitter, or you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members only bonus feed. And if you are craving some more Office, you can join us in the conference room, our members only Slack. And like I've said in the last couple episodes, we have released our bonus episode for our members of our Trivia Night 2. So be sure to go and subscribe in order to listen to that. All right, Steven, so are you ready to break that pig rib with me?
Let's do it.
All right, just stay out of the spray.
Best Christmas ever.
You're welcome.
Thank you.